Welcome to our podcast, Carefully Examining the Text. In today's episode, we look at Psalm 80. Now, the heading of Psalm 80 in the New American Standard says, "For the choir director set to Al Shashnanim, Edoth, a psalm of Asaph." In the ESV, it says, "To the choir master according to the lilies, a testimony of Asaph, a psalm." Now, they're both looking at the same text, but the New American Standard transliterates some of the words while the ESV translates them. Now, one of the key points of emphasis of Psalm 80 is a refrain that is basically repeated three times. In Psalm 80, verse 3, "O God, restore us, and cause your face to shine upon us, and we will be saved." Verse 7 says basically the same thing, except it addresses God as, "O God of hosts." And verse 19, "O Lord God of hosts, restore us, and cause your face to shine upon us, and we will be saved." So this refrain in verse 3, verse 7, and verse 19 is very important to understanding the psalm. The Septuagint, the Greek translation, had a note that this is concerning the Assyrians. And so some think this is dealing with the Assyrians. It was written after the Assyrians' destruction of Samaria around 722 B.C. Psalm 79 lamented the fall of Jerusalem, and some think Psalm 80 laments the fall of the northern kingdom. One of the things that adds to this is the mention of Ephraim and Manasseh in Psalm 80, verse 2. But we don't know any of that with certainty. Let's look at the psalm. Psalm 80, verse 1, "O give ear, shepherd of Israel, you who lead Joseph like a flock, you who are enthroned above the cherubim or cherubim, shine forth before Ephraim and Benjamin and Manasseh. Stir up your power and come to save us. O God, restore us and cause your face to shine upon us, and we will be saved." We have pointed out that at the end of Psalms 77, in verse 20, 78, in verses 70 through 72, and 79, in verse 13, that all of those psalms had mentioned Israel as a flock and God as a shepherd. And so Psalm 80 opens in the same way. "O give ear, shepherd of Israel, you who lead Joseph like a flock." One of the main descriptions of God in Psalm 80 is his description as a shepherd. And God is pictured as enthroned above the cherubim or the cherubim. Now, God is pictured as speaking to Israel above the Ark of the Covenant, the cherubim, as they looked at one another in Exodus chapter 25 and verse 22. In 1 Samuel 4:4, in 2 Samuel 6:2, God is said to be enthroned above the cherubim. Psalm 99 verse 1 makes the same point. And this passage calls God to shine forth, as Psalm 67, verse 1 does in its introduction. For God to shine forth, for God to come to stir up His power and to come to the rescue of His people in verse 2. And it calls on God, "Restore us and cause your face to shine upon us." Now, the statement about causing your face to shine upon us, we saw that idea in Psalm 67:1 that we alluded to earlier, and also in Numbers 6 in the priestly blessing. Verse 25, "The Lord bless you and keep you, and the Lord make His face to shine upon you and give you peace." God, restore us and cause your face to shine upon us. In verse 4, O Lord God of hosts, how long will you be angry with the prayer of your people? You look back at Psalm 79:5, and you see the same kind of question. How long, O Lord, will you be angry forever? Will your jealousy burn like fire? So in Psalm 79, verse 5, the question, how long, was asked. There was a reference to the Lord's anger, though a different word for anger is used in Psalm 80, verse 4. Both of these ideas are brought up again. How long will you be angry with the prayer of your people? In verse 5, you fed them with the bread of tears, and you made them to drink tears in large measure. Similar words, Psalm 42, verse 3, Psalm 102, verse 9. But you fed them with the bread of tears, and in verse 6, you made them an object of contention. You make us an object of contention to our neighbors, and our enemies laugh among themselves. Now, I don't want you to misunderstand what I'm about to say, because the cause of the people's problems was their sin, as I hope we can clearly point out in a moment. The cause of the people's problem was their sin, but they viewed God as the one who brought calamity upon them because of their sin. In verse 5, you fed them with the bread of tears, and you made them to drink tears in large measure. In verse 6, you made us an object of contention to our neighbors. So in these passages, they understand that God has put them in this distress, even though they've deserved it. But even though they view God as the problem, and you understand how I use that word, they also view God as the solution. God was the only one to whom they could turn in this crisis. And that's what you see in verse 3. That's what you see again in verse 7. O God of hosts, restore us and cause your face to shine upon us, and we will be saved. It looks to God as the solution for their difficulties. God is viewed as a warrior in this psalm. You notice he's called in verse 4, O Lord God of hosts. Often the word host was used to refer to an army, a physical army. In Genesis 21, verse 22, Abimelech, Phicol, the commander of his army. The word army, the same Hebrew word for host. To speak of God as the Lord of hosts, one of the ideas is that God is the army. God is the Lord of armies. He's the Lord of the heavenly armies. And God is often referred to as the Lord of hosts in this psalm, or the God of hosts. In verse 4, in verse 7, you see these ideas. You see it in verse 14. You see it in verse 19 as well. But the God who is the God of the armies of heaven is a warrior. God is shepherd in verse 1. God is warrior. But there's another picture of God that we're going to begin to see in verse 8. And that is the picture of God as a gardener. God as the one who keeps the vineyard of Israel. From the English Standard Version, in verse 8, you brought a vine out of Egypt. You drove out the nations and planted it. You cleared the ground for it, and it took deep root and filled the land. God has done everything possible to make Israel, who is described as a vine, to make that vine fruitful, to make sure that vine bears fruit. Israel is spoken of as a vine in several passages. Jeremiah 2:21, Hosea 10, verse 1, Isaiah 5, verses 1 through 7, which we plan to look at in a moment. But Israel is often spoken of as a vine. But God is pictured as transporting that vine out of Egypt, the Exodus. And God is taking the nations out of the way as he clears the ground and roots the vineyard in Canaan. And this refers to his conquest of the land of Canaan, driving out the nations and making it a dwelling place for his people. This vine grows like wildfire. And in verse 10, the mountains were covered with its shades and the mighty cedars with its branches. This vine is pictured as growing so abundantly that it even dwarfs the mighty cedars of Lebanon. And its geographical boundaries. In verse 11, it sent out its branches to the sea and its shoots to the river. The sea may refer to the Mediterranean, the river to the Euphrates. This may be a description of the geographical boundaries of Israel and how this vine that was planted filled all of the land. It filled all of the land. So God, as the gardener, has cared for this vineyard and made sure that it bears fruit. But notice in verse 12, the situation of the vine is changed. The question, why then have you broken down its walls so that all who pass along the way pluck its fruit? The boar from the forest ravages it, and all that move in the field feed on it. A wall or a hedge was a protection against wild beasts devouring the vineyard. It kept those wild beasts out. But God has broken down the hedge so that even these wild boars could devour everything in the vineyard. And the question is asked, why have you broken down its hedges? Isaiah 5, which uses that imagery of the vineyard, gives the answer to that question. God says in Isaiah 5, when I expected this vine to produce good grapes, it produced only worthless ones. So now I'll tell you what I'm going to do to that vineyard. I'm going to remove its hedge and it will be consumed. I'm going to break down its wall and it will be trampled down. I'll lay it waste. I'll not prune it nor hoe it. Briars and thorns will consume it and I won't let any rain fall on it. The reason the hedge was broken down is because of the people's sins. When God expected good grapes, there were only worthless ones. When God looked for justice, there was bloodshed. And when he looked for righteousness, there was distress. And because of this, God has broken down the hedge. The point is, it's the people's sin that have gotten them into this distress. But they look to God as the answer. In verse 14, O Lord, O God of hosts, turn again now, we beseech you. Look down from heaven and see and take care of this vine, even the shoot which your right hand has planted, and on the son whom you have strengthened for yourself. God is the gardener, and the shoot that God has planted, he's asked to keep this shoot alive. But Israel is also described as a son that God has strengthened. In verse 16, the text seems to go back to this gardener image when it says that it is burned with fire, it is cut down, they perish at the rebuke of your countenance. Let your hand be upon the man of your right hand and the son of man whom you have made strong for yourself. Then we will not turn back from you. Revive us and we will call on your name. O Lord God of hosts, restore us. Cause your face to shine upon us and we will be saved. So much could be said about those passages. As verse 17 speaks of the man of your right hand and the Son of Man that God has made strong, some think that's a reference to the king of Israel or Judah in particular. But the people promised, Lord, if you restore us, we will call on your name. Genesis 4, verse 26, men began to call on the name of the Lord. And what you see here in this particular passage is you see they promise we will call on you once more if you revive us. Now, certainly there's much depth in Psalm 80 that we've barely probed. And there's several connections with Psalm 79 that would have also been beneficial to compare. But how does Psalm 80 speak of Jesus? Well, just as the picture of a vine was often used to describe Israel, so Jesus is the true vine. Now, generally, when the vine is a picture of Israel, it stresses Israel's unfaithfulness to God. That is the case in Jeremiah 2:21, Jeremiah 12:10, and Hosea 10:1. Usually the vine stresses the image of Israel's unfaithfulness. Isaiah 5 does that. But Isaiah 27, verses 2 through 6, is in some sense an answer to Isaiah 5, or an answer to the people's situation. God promises that the vineyard will be restored and that once again it will bear fruit. Read Isaiah 27, 2 through 6, and compare it with Isaiah 5, 1 through 7, and just see if you're going to be benefited from doing that. But Israel is generally a failed vine. But in contrast to this, Jesus is the true vine. In John 5, Jesus says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. The Father is the gardener. Jesus is the true vine. Every branch in me that bears fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. But every branch in me that does not bear fruit, it's broken off and cast into the fire. So John 15, verses 1 through 6, as it emphasizes Jesus as the true vine, shows us his answer to Psalm 80. Jesus is indeed the true vine. It bears fruit for God. And Jesus, of course, is the good shepherd of Psalm 80, verse 1. He's the good shepherd of John 10, verses 1 through 18. But just as Jesus fulfills the role of God in Psalm 80, as Jesus is the good shepherd who leads his people, Jesus also fulfills the role of this disobedient people. Could Jesus have uttered the words of verse 5, that you fed me with the bread of tears and you made me drink tears in large measures? Did Jesus, a man of sorrows, experience great pain, great sadness, and brokenness because of his people's sin? In Psalm 80, verse 6, you make us an object of contention to our neighbors, and our enemies laugh among themselves. Could Jesus have stated those words as he suffered in the cross? So you see that Jesus is the true vine, the good shepherd. But Jesus experiences the same kind of sadness and same kind of sadness that Israel experienced, they experienced it because of their unfaithfulness. He experiences it because of our unfaithfulness as well. Yes, Jesus is the Son of Man. Verse 17, Psalm 80. Jesus is the man of your right hand. Jesus is the fulfillment of this psalm. May the Lord bless you.